Good morning. You are tuned in to Community Radio, listener-supported KGNU. I'm Maeve Conran, and coming up on today's Morning Magazine, Boulder residents who feel strongly about the city's decade-old effort to create its own municipal utility will have several opportunities to participate in virtual town halls during the month of June as the city negotiates with Xcel Energy. We'll have more coming up. After that, we'll hear about legislation that's being introduced today at the State House. It would increase transparency when it comes to police actions, and it would increase accountability around police brutality. We'll hear from the Denver legislator who's sponsoring the bill. Two regular Wednesday morning features then, Make Them Hear You, followed by Naturally. Then after headlines from the BBC and a commentary from Jim Hightower, we'll bring you a special rebroadcast of a radio play that was first presented on KGNU last year, Black with a capital B. It's a Destination Freedom production. At 9 o'clock, Sam Fuqua takes a look at the impact of the coronavirus on water in Colorado, from water safety to water infrastructure. It's part of our Connecting the Drops series. But first, we'll begin with the latest local headlines. For a sixth straight night, thousands of protesters took over downtown Denver on Tuesday, denouncing police brutality and calling for reform after the killing of George Floyd in Minneapolis more than a week ago. Last night, the police did not use tear gas and there were no major conflicts reported. The Denver Post reports that protesters moved from the state capitol to Civic Center, then the 16th Street Mall, shouting, "No justice, no peace." The marchers made their way to Coors Field, where they took to their knees. By the time the protesters reached Union Station, the crowd stretched for blocks. At the state capitol, hundreds more protesters rallied, listening to speeches before marching down Broadway at about 8 p.m. After 9 o'clock, which was when the curfew went into effect, demonstrators were persisting in marching near 20th and Champa Streets and then illuminating the night at the Capitol with their cell phones. Denver 7 reports that police officers were mostly on the sidelines. Protests were underway Tuesday in other Colorado cities, from Colorado Springs to Longmont to Gunnison, where the High Country News reports that several hundred people were demonstrating. A television reporter posted video of Colorado Springs police ordering protesters to disperse last night and then using tear gas. Tuesday marked the fourth consecutive day of demonstrations in Colorado Springs. Denver police announced in a news release late Tuesday night that they will host an hour-long virtual town hall at 6 p.m. this evening so that residents can discuss what policies they'd like to see moving forward. Denver City Council members are calling for an investigation into the city's police department after officers injured bystanders, protesters and journalists during the protests. The Denver Post reports that complaints have flooded in, saying that law enforcement officers are targeting peaceful protesters, onlookers and clearly identified journalists with pepper balls, chemical sprays and non-lethal projectiles. Photos and videos have been posted on social media showing people at the protests with bloody faces, bruised bodies and teary faces, using milk to calm gas irritants. Denver's police watchdog is investigating more than 150 complaints about officers' response to protests. Nick Mitchell, Denver's independent monitor of the city's police and sheriff departments, told the Colorado Sun that in the last 72 hours, his office had received over 150 complaints from members of the public related to police conduct during the demonstrations. Police Chief Paul Pazan and Denver Mayor Michael Hancock have said that officers responded with force only after being hit by rocks, water bottles and other items. But videos have shown, and Colorado Sun journalists have witnessed, police using force without provocation on demonstrators. Yesterday, the Denver Police Department fired a police officer for writing "Let's start a riot" as a caption to a photo that he'd posted on Instagram of himself and two other officers in riot gear. Democratic state lawmakers have unveiled a sweeping bill aimed at increasing law enforcement accountability in Colorado by collecting racial profiling data and ensuring officers will hold each other accountable. It also ensures that the public will find it easier to file lawsuits against the police. The measure could be introduced as soon as today, and we will have more on that later in the Morning Magazine. Some Colorado law enforcement groups are jointly urging the legislature to take aim at the police code of silence by speaking up on cops who fail to step in when the public is being abused. Colorado Politics reports that the county sheriffs of Colorado, the Colorado Fraternal Order of Police and the Colorado Association of Chiefs of Police are asking the General Assembly to make it a crime when fellow officers fail to intervene in the use of unreasonable force. The groups have said that an officer's duty to intervene is an expectation of most law enforcement agencies in the state, but their proposal would make it the law with criminal penalties. Denver Public Schools are expected to begin a conversation about the role of police officers in Denver schools, with some district leaders pushing to remove them entirely. School board member Tay Anderson tweeted on Tuesday evening that board members and Denver Public Schools superintendent Susana Cordoba would gather on Friday morning to announce the future of Denver Public Schools and the Denver Police Department. Anderson added that he and board vice president Jennifer Bacon would ask the community to help them draft a resolution that would end the district's agreement with the city as it relates to police and schools. Chuckbeat reports that it could not reach Bacon for a comment. Currently, the school district and the city split the cost of providing 18 police officers to work as so-called school resource officers in some of the district's secondary schools. Students of colour face disproportionately harsh discipline in the schools. District statistics show that black students, who make up 13% of students in Denver, are far more likely than white students to be suspended, expelled, handcuffed, or referred to law enforcement. Boulder County continues a downward trend in reported coronavirus-related deaths and probable cases. Boulder County Public Health Executive Director Jeff Zayek presented the latest report to Boulder City Council last night, and he said the number of cases has increased by 2 since Monday of this week.
As of 3 o'clock today, we did receive a notice from BCH that they have no positive or probable cases in the hospital at all that are COVID-19. So that's some great news. Again, this trend is demonstrating the great work that our communities have done. And I know that's come with a lot of sacrifice. So I just want to, again, just let people know my appreciation of how much time, effort and seriousness they put into this.
To date, the number of Boulder County coronavirus-related deaths remains at 62. In Boulder County, Zayek said Longmont continues to have the highest number of cases and the most severe rate of infection. Across Colorado, as of yesterday, hospitalizations for COVID-19 fell to their lowest level since late March. However, deaths directly linked to the new virus jumped. And it's possible, though, that delayed reporting accounted for some of the increase. In the weather today, expect mostly sunny, highs around 90 degrees and a chance of afternoon showers and thunderstorms and similar temperatures and conditions on Thursday. It is 12 minutes past 8 o'clock. You're listening to KGNU. Boulder will host the first of 5 virtual town halls starting this Friday to let the public offer feedback on the city's ongoing negotiations with Xcel Energy over efforts to create a municipal utility. As KGNU's Ros Brown reports, City Council reviewed the proposal for listening sessions at a meeting last night.
Just as it was becoming clear the coronavirus pandemic would devastate Boulder's coffers, the city and Xcel Energy announced mid-May that discussions would begin to explore a new path to help Boulder meet its future energy goals. That exploration will include alternatives to a municipally managed, community-owned electric utility, something long sought by various councils and Boulder residents. Boulder began its acrimonious divorce from provider Xcel in 2010, with a voter-approved ballot measure to stand up its own electric utility in order to reduce greenhouse gas and address climate change. During last night's public comment by phone, Jim Morris urged council not to give up the fight.
Since 2010, we've spent $2 to $3 million a year, or a total of about $23 million, all voter-approved. In contrast, Xcel took home $23 million in profit just last year and has profited millions each previous year. The city has won many of its necessary cases. We are super close to getting our own electric utility. Now's the time to keep going.
Boulder has spent so much money to start his own electric utility because from the outset, Xcel dug in its heels to keep a major customer, using the courts to slow the process. Originally hostile to Boulder's carbon reduction requests, 10 years later, Xcel has promised to deliver 100% carbon-free electricity to customers by 2050 and says it wants to work with Boulder on its energy priorities. But should an agreement be reached, Boulder voters would need to approve. Patrick Murphy, originally a supporter of municipalization, is now a critic. He believes Boulderites are ready to move on.
Early in the Muni process, we negotiated an offer where Xcel would dedicate a wind farm to Boulder's electric usage that would cover 80%. Did we get to vote on that possible off-ramp? No. In 2017, we had two negotiated options. Were we allowed to vote on those possible off-ramps? No. The history of failure to allow us to vote is clear. Let us vote.
City Engagement Officer Sarah Huntley says beginning this Friday, Boulder will host a series of five virtual town halls to let the public offer feedback on the city's negotiations with Xcel. She acknowledged there would be constraints.
Obviously, the first constraint is the fact that we are in a pandemic. And while we usually would like to bring community members into a room together to have conversations about something of this magnitude, we're going to be having to use a virtual platform. We're also in a time constraint situation because if council wishes to consider any potential franchise agreement, that needs to go on the ballot, which means that these negotiation discussions are happening between now and July in order to accommodate that council decision and discussion near the end of July.
At the same time the city prepares to negotiate with Xcel, the latest financial model projects a more than $30 million loss in city revenues this year due to the impact of the coronavirus on sales tax and other revenue sources. Registration for the virtual town halls is through Eventbrite. More information is available at the city's website, bouldercolorado.gov. For KGNU, I'm Roz Brown.
As we heard in headlines, Democratic state lawmakers have unveiled a sweeping bill aimed at increasing accountability and transparency around law enforcement in Colorado. I spoke with Leslie Herod, a Democrat from Denver, who's introducing the Law Enforcement Integrity, Transparency and Accountability Act.
What we are looking at doing is ensuring that law enforcement is held to the highest standard, and that if they act criminally, they're held to the same level of responsibility that you or I would be. And so what the bill does is it requires body-worn cameras and that the footage from body cameras be released within 7 days after an incident. It also creates a annual report in the public division of criminal justice where law enforcement will be required to report incidences and the race of those folks that they are stopping, basically so that we can see if there's issues of racial profiling and act. We also are looking at qualified immunity. And as you know, this is a big issue. So what we are doing is removing qualified immunity so that law enforcement that does act criminally or unlawfully can be criminally prosecuted. Additionally, we're getting rid of the fleeing felon laws. Fleeing felon is basically a vestige of Jim Crow, where it allows a law enforcement officer to shoot someone in the back who's running away if they think that that person is a felon. What the Supreme Court has said is that the standard really should be if the officer is in imminent danger, then they should be allowed to shoot. And so this changes that law. And as you know, we've had some Colorado cases that deal specifically with that. The other piece is about their post-certification. So post is what law enforcement officers get basically to be able to use their weapon, for instance, and to be able to be a public servant in that way. And so this would take away their certification if they have unlawful use of force ending in death or serious bodily injury, or they leave their department while under investigation. It'll remove their post-certification, effectively saying that they cannot be a law enforcement officer in the state ever again. And then finally, we're working on a piece to create an independent investigations unit to investigate law enforcement and hold them and hold bad actors accountable. The final piece is requiring and ensuring that law enforcement officers that see another law enforcement officer who is acting outside of the scope of their duties and acting, you know, unlawfully, it's requiring them to report. It's giving them a duty to report and a duty to intervene. And so they have to, one, intervene and stop the incident or report about it afterwards to ensure that that law enforcement officer who acted improperly is held accountable. And if they don't, they're going to be held to the same standard as if they themselves were doing it as a law enforcement officer. And so think of it as a, you know, you need to be an active bystander if you are wearing a badge. And so those are the things that are in the bill, and I'm really excited to move it forward.
Well, I know that elements of those things that you've just outlined there, there have been attempts to implement things like that in various different regional police departments, and particularly in Denver, where there is the Office of Independent Monitoring. And there has been so many incidents of police force. And I know that some family members of people who have died at the hands of police joined you today. You know, give us a sense of the context of this, because this goes far beyond the last few days of what we've seen in regards to protest in Denver. This is going back many, many years, particularly here in Denver, in your constituency.
Yes, that is correct. And throughout Colorado. So I want to say that, you know, we've had issues in Denver. We've had issues in Aurora, Colorado Springs, but across the state, even in the smaller counties where we don't talk about it a lot, but there are a lot of vulnerable citizens in these smaller counties. And so what we did today was we highlighted some of the families. We highlighted the family of Devon Bailey and Michael Marshall. Their family members came out to demand justice. And it's time for us to act. I mean, people do think that this is only happening in other cities, Chicago, Minneapolis, doesn't happen here in Colorado. They're wrong. And across the country, our law enforcement officers should be held accountable.
Give us your take on what's been happening over the past few days. And I know the Denver Police Department has said that they will have investigations into allegations of the police force being used against peaceful protesters. And certainly a group of advocacy groups for journalists have called out journalists being targeted. You know, as we said, this is a much bigger problem, but the last few days has certainly shone a spotlight on this as well.
Absolutely. It has shone a spotlight on the issues in this country. And, you know, it's a real shame that we had to watch the horrific death of George Floyd to wake up and shake folks into action on this issue. There are just so many other families that are hurting. And I heard that today, and that broke my heart. You know, one of the mothers of a victim said, "Why didn't you come out for my son?" You know, that's hard to hear. But she did also add, right, that like she wants to see justice done now. And so that's what we're going to do. So, you know, death by officer is not something that is new. It's just something that's being filmed right now. And thankfully, because we have seen those films, we're able to understand what is happening and shake people into action. You know, I think about some of the civil rights demonstrations and protests and riots, and quite frankly, the brutality that, you know, my elders, right, of my family face at the hands of law enforcement just for fighting for the vote. And the thing that shook up America was seeing it on television, seeing it broadcast on prime time. And I think America has seen too many Black people being killed by law enforcement officers to turn away anymore. They can't turn away anymore. They're waking up and they're saying that this needs to stop. And it's across the political spectrum. It's across race. And I am glad to see Colorado standing up and speaking out against these issues.
Death at the hands of police is certainly at the extreme end of a spectrum, but it is a spectrum. And I know that certainly in last year's session, there were efforts at criminal justice reform that dealt with other parts of the spectrum that are maybe less discussed in terms of bail reform, in terms of, you know, the cash bond system that's impacting people of color at such disproportionate rates. Have you seen the impact of that legislation coming through? And does that give you hope that the criminal justice system can be reformed?
Absolutely. I mean, I ran those bills, and I ran them because the community asked me to run those bills, and we passed them. We passed them with bipartisan support. And so it is time to change. It is time to change the criminal justice system. And you know what? If you ask the average person on the street if they know these bills pass, I bet most of them would say no. But if you also ask them if Colorado is any more is any less safe of a place, I think they'd also say no. And so the whole argument that bail reform will lead to an unsafe Colorado just didn't play out. Or, you know, ensuring that people with low-level drug offenses, simple possession, are not thrown in jail, but instead get access to treatment, that has made Colorado a better and safer place. And I'm proud of those bills passing.
That's Leslie Herod, a Democrat from Denver, who is introducing as early as today the Law Enforcement Integrity, Transparency and Accountability Act. It is 8:24. Time now for Make Them Hear You.
This is Make Them Hear You with ideas how you can have your voice heard before Congress. We have not seen protests like these in a long time. Much of the actual decision-making about official responses is happening at the municipal and state levels. So today, I will leave the Washington Halls of Congress and quote community organizer Barack Obama, who wrote, quote, "First, the waves of protests across the country represent a genuine and legitimate frustration over a decades-long failure to reform police practices and the broader criminal justice system in the United States. The overwhelming majority of participants have been peaceful, courageous, responsible, and inspiring." On the other hand, I saw an elderly black woman being interviewed today in tears because the only grocery store in her neighborhood had been trashed and it may take years to come back. So let's not excuse violence or rationalize it or participate in it. If we want our criminal justice system and American society at large to operate on a higher ethical code, then we have to model that code ourselves. Second, I've heard some suggest that the recurrent problem of racial bias in our criminal justice system proves that only protests and direct action can bring about change, and that voting and participation in electoral politics is a waste of time. I couldn't disagree more. The point of protest is to raise public awareness, to put a spotlight on injustice, and to make the powers that be uncomfortable. In fact, throughout American history, it's often only been in response to protests and civil disobedience that the political system has even paid attention to marginalized communities. But eventually, aspirations have to be translated into specific laws and institutional practices. And in a democracy, that only happens when we elect government officials who are responsive to our demands. Moreover, it is important for us to understand which levels of government have the biggest impact on our criminal justice system and police practices. The elected officials who matter most in reforming police departments and the criminal justice system work at the state and local levels. The choice is not between protest and politics. We have to do both. We have to mobilize to raise awareness, and we have to organize and cast our ballots to make sure that we elect candidates who will act on reform. Finally, the more specific we can make demands for criminal justice and police reform, the harder it will be for elected officials to just offer lip service to the cause and then fall back into business as usual once protests have gone away. The content of that reform agenda will be different for various communities, close quote. If you want to get up to speed on how to lobby your local officials for police reform, Obama is offering a report and toolkit that he helped create when he was in the White House. New Era of Public Safety and Advocacy Kit for Fair, Safe, and Effective Community Policing. You can find it at Obama.org under Anguish and Action. As Obama said, let's get to work. This is Chris Moore with Make Them Hear You.
Coming up at 8:35 this morning, a special rebroadcast of a radio play originally brought to you last year on KGNU, a Destination Freedom production, Black with a capital B. That's coming up in just under 10 minutes' time. Next, though, it's Naturally.
Greetings, welcome to Naturally. This is Brigitte Mars. Today I'm going to share some ideas on making amazing salads. I think that eating greens is a discipline, and ideally we should eat one or even two salads a day. So when you're making salad for dinner, make enough so you can have some for lunch the next day. And for those of you that eat animal products, you might think about having fish or chicken on your salad rather than protein with grains, which usually isn't a really good food combination. When you're preparing salads, tear the greens into bite-sized pieces. If you cut them, metal knives tend to discolor them. But another trick is, if you like to cut your salad and chop up everything nice, get a ceramic knife. They're available at culinary stores, and they do not discolor things like lettuce and celery. It's really best to not add tomatoes and cucumbers until you're ready to eat the salad, and only to the portion that you're going to eat, because tomatoes and cucumbers will make everything soggy. So if you are going to serve salad the next day, leave the cucumbers and tomatoes separately so that you don't have a soggy salad. It's really best to make salads about an hour beforehand that you're going to eat them and chill them until serving time. So besides using the proverbial lettuce and a few vegetables, you might want to add some garden herbs like anise hyssop or basil, lemon balm, mizuna, parsley, peppermint, rosemary, and spearmint. So go ahead and use some of your herbal abundance in salads. These things are all edible and really delicious. Use two or three different greens. And of course, you want to go for color. If you have a food processor, it's really easy to add things like red cabbage and grated carrots to use a wide variety of colors in your salad. If you always use 10 ingredients in your salad, every salad's going to seem the same. But if you stick to maybe three ingredients, then you can make a plethora of salads that are always different. And don't forget decorating your salads with edible flowers. Makes them beautiful. Make sure the flowers are organic, but you can use rose petals. Daylilies are amazing, and they only bloom for a day, so you might as well use them. Nasturtiums, marigolds broken up, even dandelion flowers. And flowers are said to be the sex organs of plants. They're great if you perhaps want to attract pollinators and just add beauty and grace and phytonutrients to your own salad. Thanks for joining me, Brigitte Mars, on Naturally.